how come you didn't attend the Invitational last year? Was it because you chickened out being paired Tau into Harlequins and it was no point?
I think we're live. We didn't do the countdown. I could do the countdown, but I didn't press the button. So we're doing this without the countdown. If someone was unprepared, then it's absolutely my fault and you can blame only me for this. So hello, everyone. We started on time, so that's really good. Welcome to episode 2 of the series that we call the LGT's Lucky 7. This is a series of interviews that we want to do leading up to the LGT London Grand Tournament that is happening at the end of this month. Apparently, from what I hear, it's been sold out, so there are going to be plenty of people attending this event this year. Apparently, if the gossip is right, this might turn out to be the biggest singles event in the world. So far, I think it has the title of the biggest singles event on this side
of the pond.
Of the pond, exactly.
Of 10th edition.
Of 10th edition, definitely. although so far, I think this is the War Masters event at the World Team Championships in Belgium. But hopefully, London will become the one. You could hear the voice of our guest already, so I'll just do the introductions. I am Tomek, or Tweak, as you might know me from the previous episodes, your usual host of the show. With me, the other usual host of the show, Michał, also known as Joker.
Hello.
Hi, Michał. And our wonderful, wonderful guest, the English Prodigy member of Team England this year to the WTC, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Nassim Fushain.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me on board again. You're giving me too many props there.
No. I mean, it's well deserved. We've seen you play at the event last year. We've seen you pull it almost, like slightly, but pull it off amazingly with your Tau last year, where you finished second against Sacco, I think. In the final game, we were there to report on it. We were there to witness it. We were there to witness the Sacco's joy, to witness your tears of disappointment, I guess. But it was an amazing experience to see you play. I haven't seen anyone play on that high level. So, yeah. I guess you're coming back this year to play both in the Invitational and in the main event. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'll be playing in both the Invitational for, I think, the Amateurs bracket. I know they have different brackets.
Yeah, there are three.
And in the main event as well.
Yeah, so there will be the Invitational event on Friday that is divided into three brackets, interestingly called Amateurs, Pros, and the Unconquerable. And the best part about that is that Nassim is in the amateur group of the Invitational, while I myself am in the pros, which absolutely blows my mind because I have never, I mean, I only maybe stood next to a pro. The only pro about me is that, yeah, we're doing this podcast, and apparently this was the key to choose the players who will be there. But in the amateurs, we have, you know, my son, Patrick Mike from Poland, we have Nassim, we have all the big names that you actually care about, and yet they are called the amateurs. But yeah, I guess we will get verified very quickly on Friday of the Invitational event. Right, Nassim, let's start with a little bit of backstory about you, perhaps. So would I be right to say that you are the golden child of COVID and you actually you became
the golden child of COVID? That's a new one. I've never heard that one before.
So you became prominent, you became recognizable, you became successful at the COVID time when you started playing TTS. Is that the right assumption, or tell us something about that?
Yeah, no, that's 100% fair. I mean, I had played prior to COVID. I wasn't very good. I think the other day I was actually going through my old BCP and I was like, wow, I really went 0-3, 1-4, 2-3 two of these times when I started. Which, oh, and then you see the comparison. But yeah, I guess you could say I gained popularity, if that's the correct word. Or I was seen more during COVID and a little bit after the COVID as well, when events started to open back up and I was going to events with my Iron Hands and doing better than what people were expecting of them at the time. So yeah, I think, yeah, that's fair. I definitely came out of that, thanks to TTS. I mean, I was playing it just before joining here. So definitely have a lot of credit to give to that.
So is that what actually, you know, made the biggest change for you? Because you said, you know, you went to tournaments, you didn't do very well. Was TTS sort of responsible for your success?
Yeah, so 100%. Don't shy away from it. 100%. TTS is like one of the main factors, if not the like most standout factor, that why I've done so well and why I've gotten to the level that I am. Like being able to essentially, because let's be honest, we all off week A. It's very expensive to be these models. It's not cheap. Yeah. It's very expensive. Don't know about you, but meta chasing is not an option.
There is no cheap hobby right now, but yeah, this is more expensive ones. But
some hobbies are more expensive than others. I really enjoyed 40k. I had my guard at the time, like I was just collecting them, just playing around with them, having fun. I know with some of the pod DTS, like some of my friends, Jaime, Anna, and like a few others that you would know now, I'm just playing with them through TTS and actually played each other, got better. And it was just thanks to that I was actually able to get to the level that I am here. So it's definitely thanks to TTS. And luckily at the time I was a student, so that wasn't like, it's not like I had full-time responsibilities. I say that's exams, but I didn't have full-time responsibilities. The clubs were closed. So I was like, you know what to do? I can't even travel back, so let's just play on my computer and hey, TTS. That's kind of where it went from. I think when I was like 19. But yeah, from then now I'm old and decrepit, 23.
So tell us maybe about how you got involved with the LGT. So which edition will that be for you this year? Because officially it's the seventh edition of the event, because we're not counting like the COVID, the pandemic years. But if we count all the editions that actually took place, this one is the seventh one. Which one will it be for you?
From the LGTs I would have been to?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. This would be my third LGT.
Right. Okay.
Last year was my second LGT. Yeah.
And you came second at your second LGT, which is wow, amazing. Okay. So what makes you come back to that event? Is there anything special? Is there anything different about the LGT than any other tournament that you attend to?
Well, it's in London and I live in London. So that's like the main factor. It's in London. And I don't need to buy accommodation or like a house share with a mate or something. I can just like take the transport up and then go back down the same day. It's like, it works out great. Until you realize you have to do a 3-day because you make top cut and then you have work the next day after that. So the fact that it's in London, the fact it's one of the largest events, just periods, full stop. And I get to see everyone I know, not just from the UK, but because it's such a large scene over here that people actually come over from abroad. Like there's people like Anthony Vanilla, like TJ Lanigan that are coming over that I'm good mates with that I actually get to see that I don't always get to see. Like I'll talk to them on Discord, talk to them via, you know, anyway through the internet. But actually being able to see them and actually, you know, have a conversation, hang out, that's like another big factor and why I actually like going to large events. I just get to see a lot of friends and the relationships that I've created and bonds I've made with people throughout this hobby.
Okay. And are TJ and Anthony coming this year?
Yeah, so I know Anthony's coming this year. TJ's also coming, what I understand. So yeah, there's going to be people from across the pond coming over. There you go.
Yeah, I'm asking because when we were at the WTC, Typhus actually invited us to Joker, myself, his girlfriend, some other guys to a karaoke studio. And out of nowhere, TJ came, and it turned out that he sings like a freaking angel. Like,
oh, does he?
Yeah, I think he has some like musical background or something like that. So he was actually quite amazing, and we were all like, "We're not singing with you."
We were embarrassing ourselves, and then he just comes in, and he's Chris fucking Cornell. So you know, it's just like totally different levels.
Like a stone or something like that. And I was doing "Come on, Barbie, Let's Go Party," where I was Ken or
butchering
whoever
does it.
Yeah, I was absolutely butchering it. So yeah, but yeah, back to the LGT. So are you bringing your team with you?
War Masters or England?
So
you tell us.
You tell us.
I mean, a lot of the War Masters are definitely going because a lot of them also based in London. So like, I know there's a good amount of the War Masters going on. If I check here quickly for you, I think the amount of people that are going to LGT from our group is me, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 19 to 20 of us.
Wow. Okay.
Give or take, roughly. And then after England, just like from the people who were on the team and the coaching staff, I know that I think that 100% no, I know Manny's going, I know that Harrison is going, I know that Ramsey is going, I know that Porter is going.
I mean, that's the event that you want to be at, I guess.
Yeah, it's like it's the LVO of Europe.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'd have to say it's just with better terrain. But,
yeah. Zach will probably be offended by that statement.
No, he won't. I know. He you know, on one hand, he competes with the LVO, but on the other hand, they are good friends with the guys who organize it, so it's, I guess, good competition between them. But he is aiming at actually making it the biggest one in the world. So fingers crossed that happens, and we don't have many people dropping.
So if it's sold out, then is it how many people theoretically? 1,000 tickets? Or?
I don't have the numbers, but I think that he was going for something like that, 900 to 1,000, something like this.
Because last year, I think last year of the people who essentially had played around like after drops, it was like 692 people,
something like that.
Yeah, only reason I remember that is because of Gunhammer. They always put it up like the amount of players and how many like actually played the first round. So it would be more than that. So I suspect around 800-900 people. I'd say high 800s off the drops. High 800s, low 900s, roughly, give or take.
Yeah.
Which is
sounds
a lot.
Monstrous. Yeah.
So before we go into discussing your prep, I have to throw some shade and ask a question about last year, mainly given because you're like the biggest trash talker in 40K that I probably know.
I refuse that. I don't know what you're on about.
How come you didn't attend the Invitational last year? Was it because you chickened out being paired Tau into Harlequins and it was no point? Or
so, I can show you pictures. I was like snot coming out of my nose. Even day one of LGT, I was in bed, like my eyes were watering, snot coming out of my nose. I just had paper stuck up, like this tissue paper just up my nose. I've got a pictures on the day, and I was just like, God, I just can't. I was like, there's no way. Like, I was just supposed to actually jump from the main event as well, and I was like, oh my God, I just, like, day one, I felt terrible. Day two, I recovered. But yeah, oh god, that was.
Would you believe that? I think Joker was waited for a year to ask you that question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why would I be scared? It's only Harlequins with my tail. Did you not see how many shots I had? I had like 300 plus shots in that army. I don't need rerolls. I don't need reroll hits. I didn't have reroll hits anyways. I had reroll wounds in my army.
Yeah, you go by volumes.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So, in terms of prep, so how do you prepare for an event like that, for a biggest singles event? I know we've talked about that with multiple guests last year, and we've mentioned also like the physical toll on a person going 14 rounds across 4 days is absolutely hectic. But do you have any pointers in terms of the game itself and in terms of like physical, mental prep for the actual event side thing?
So I'll go with it from like start to like finish, and like what my full process is before the event, and what my thinking goes into it, and then after I'll transition to what it is during the event. So before the event, what I like to do is just have a look. Now there's been a balanced data slate, it's like it's a little bit more up and going, like the WT is like, hey, what's good, what's not good, we'll figure it out. So I like that there's that element of LGT. Like we don't know, oh, after the change this is still good, Eldar still the best army. But apart from that, it's JDLV definitely didn't miss with that one. So it's just analyzing what armies are like still powerful after the changes, what armies may have, maybe have creeped through, you know, the cracks, what armies may have slipped maybe. And I know that's like the main talk of the show today, like what armies that I personally find are quite good, which we'll talk about, such as they might seem like Tau, Voltan, etc. So it's really analyzing which one of those armies essentially, which of those armies are now good and which powerful, which ones I have to worry about, which ones I don't, and essentially what armies I have that I have access to, aka Borrowhammer, that I can feasibly give a game into every single matchup. It might not be a landslide victory. It doesn't have to. It never has to be a landslide victory. That's always preferred, but it's not as black and white as that anymore, which is a good thing for the game. But so it's just analyzing which army is going to give me the best overall matchup into everything else. It's like where I can leverage a decent amount of player skill, decent amount of like the playstyle I like to play, which is like an aggressive play style, where I can capitalize on mistakes but also potentially play passively if it has to. That's always the last resort, playing passive, and that's my thought process behind it. And then I will actually put it on the table, see, okay, in theory this is quite good, and I'll just have like different iterations of it and how it evolves. Currently I'm playing around with Eldar and Tau, because Tau just got even better. They were good before, but now they got better. And Eldar is still very good. Wraith Knight's dead, okay. The index still survives. Phantasm, by the way, actually received a buff because you can't vector anymore. Which is interesting to think about. So it's like it's actually figure out like those sort of combos, like, oh, this rule has changed, so you can only make these specific strats free. Oh wait, that means these stratagems that will keep for certain armies can't get vectored anymore, so they can use it more often. So therefore it's actually more powerful than before. And it's like figuring out, oh, cost totals have gone, like I've actually gone down in durability because of the change to dev wounds and them going from 5 man to 10 man. So from 10 man to 5 man. So their stratagems are now not as efficient on the 10 man. They can still double and make it free. However, they're not getting as much efficiency, and devastating wounds now does more damage. So stuff like Stern Guard, like Wraith Guard, anything that has a dev wounds profile is able to cut through them more efficiently. So I'm like, okay, that's dropped down a bit. Oh wait, because dev wounds has changed, hordes are actually a little bit better now because they don't spill over. So maybe hordes are the way to go. But actually some armies can just deal with those. So it's really trying to understand that what army does the best into those sort of scenarios, and then seeing feasibly how does it place on a table, how does it play on a table. Which is a it's a long process. Like you're not gonna do it in 2 to 3 games. Because it's gonna take you like two dozen games, like at least, to have that sort of understanding of it, and also discussing it with members of your team, with peers, like friends that also like at a good level, or maybe like reaching out to coaches and getting their thoughts on it. It's always worth it. But that's my thoughts before. And then during the event is really just sticking to my practice and not being taken back when something doesn't go to plan. Like, you always go into a game with a game plan, even if the game plan is as simple as I'm going to run at you and I'm going to kill you. Even if the game plan is as simple as that. And then if that game plan doesn't go to plan, having a backup for it, and essentially not being flustered. I think the most important thing is, one, making sure that you're hydrated for it, so you're always thinking clearly, you're getting fresh air, etc. Have food in you. It helps a lot. That's one of the key advices during the actual event. Two is that when something doesn't go to plan, it's fine. It's not fine, but, you know, like, don't let it affect you, because then it can lead to a spiral downwards. It's like, oh, I've done that mistake. Oh, that's the end of the game, whatever. And then you're already just accepting defeat. You're not going to try and look for a way out. And once you feel like, oh, crap, I've made that mistake. Okay, now what can I do to fix that now? And because, like, it will happen. Like, I think there's a famous saying that a plan doesn't, like, plan never survives first contact with the enemy. And that's very true. It's very true. And you'll find that our GTs, like, even, like, top players, like, the game plan sometimes doesn't work. So you just have to think of something else on the fly. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is through the practice games that you've done before, have the scenarios in your head. Oh, this didn't go to plan in my game plans. What did I actually do that? So you have a backup plan, or you're able to, like, oh, I've seen this sort of scenario before. I'm going to adapt this way, and this will give, like, this might not guarantee a win, but it will benefit me rather than negative me. So a lot of it is about mindset and just making sure they're always thinking clearly in that regard. I don't know if that was a lot or if that was if that really helps. That's my thinking behind it.
No, it's all good. I mean, the question was about your thinking behind it, so that's what we got. And how do you prioritize practice games in this situation? Because you could say that the meta isn't exactly defined at this stage. So how do you know what to put your armies into to test matchups, etc., for it to be worthwhile? I don't know if that question is making sense the way I put it, but
no.
Do you play versus anything and everything, or do you prioritize, like, for example, before the WTC, where you probably play the most common, you know, armies that you're going to face? So is it the same when prepping for a huge tournament like this one?
So, Jeff, I'll definitely put some priority on the armies that you think are best, 100%. However, don't disregard armies that you know don't think are up there either. Like, I don't think Chaos Knights are, like, even though they're great, I don't think they're that amazing, because death wound change didn't change anything to them. They still die just as fast. And actually, like, there's no, like, full up even smaller wounds. I don't know if they had access to that, but like, that hasn't changed. Like, anti-tank is, you know, that's not really taking a hit, so like, that's still there. So like, it's still good to get those sort of practice games in to understand. What I like to do is, when I build a list, is like, okay, how does this do into an list archetype? Essentially, how does this do against a skew in one direction with loads of vehicle? How does it do into a skew in one direction with loads of infantry? How does it do down the middle? Is the three that I want to figure out. Because if it's great, I like killing vehicles, but you, the moment you play these 100 bodies, you lose. What's the point, right? But it's almost like, oh, I can deal with 100 bodies, but oh crap, you've got three vehicles. I'm looking at you, Grey Knights. Then you can't do anything. And it's just understanding that. And then, like, and then down the middle is always a trickier one, because people in all comers list is all, like, it's hard to practice against, because everybody will have their own take on it. So what I like to do is always practice these two extremes, see how it works there, and then see how close of a game it, like, this down the center is, essentially. You definitely want to do it ideally this, you know, the stronger armies, such as, and more common ones specifically, just because they're strong. The strongest doesn't mean always the most common. So like, you definitely want to do it these Eldar, because Eldar's still the best army in the game. You definitely want to do it these Necrons, because Necrons are really good. The change of dev wounds, and etc. Is at least the way that I think about it, like, and how to prioritize my practice. But yeah.
So I think we can use your answer and this question that Joker just asked to actually segue to the meat and potatoes of this episode. So you chose this topic yourself. And the topic, so yeah, just to explain to anyone who has just joined, we are doing this series to lead up to the LGT, and since this is the 7th edition of the LGT this year, we figured that it might be interesting to do a series that somehow revolves around the number 7. So when I speak to our guests or when I invite them, I usually pitch some sort of a topic that revolves around the number 7 and 40K and possibly the LGT, and that our guests can choose what they want to talk about. Nas here decided to talk about his take on the top 7 armies going into the event post data slate. Probably there are not going to be any more changes in the meta before the event, so we can safely discuss what the potential top 7 armies are. So Nas,
disclaimer.
Go on.
I can be wrong. It's like I can be way off. I just want to say I just don't want us to come back and like, hey, he's like, I've been wrong before. I want to be shocked if I'm wrong again.
I mean, maybe if you're wrong, then maybe even better, because it means that it is a little bit unpredictable, and it all boils down at the end to, you know, the magician, not the wand. So it depends how well someone pilots the list, pilots the army, etc., which I think is a place where we want to be. But essentially, since this is about you and we have you on, so let's listen to your take on the top 7 armies. Let's start with, I don't know if you want to put it like that, but your number 7. So not the top of the top, but still up there. You know, a potential threat at the LGT, something that people have to be careful about.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. Oh, that's a tough one. So I think for number 7, I would place it between Guard and Chaos Knights, because they are still strong. The way I see it is that both those armies are quite strong. They're quite well placed in the meta. However, starting with Chaos Knights run into the issue that I mentioned previously. They can essentially, if your army cannot deal with mass toughness 10 bodies or 5 up in ones, then you're in trouble, right? Because it's a lot of OC. It's going to tank your primary if you let it. 3 baby knights on an objective is 24 OC. That's a lot. And it's also covering the entire objective, so you're not going to take it away. Some armies just can't deal with that. Like, Grey Knights just physically cannot deal with that. You just sit on the objective, you don't score any primary, and they shoot you off. So it feels like if an army doesn't have the guns necessary to deal with that, that can just go very wrong very quickly, which is never what you want. That's not the ideal situation. When you move on from that, but if you can, then all of a sudden that matchup is a little easier. So, for example, like, I've practiced Eldar and like Tau, so like very shooting armies that have access to those profiles. Like, okay, I'll put in just enough guns so that this isn't too much of a worry, and I still have other guns that are more efficient than other things. It's like broadsides. I can point 2 broadsides with from turn 3 onwards and just pick up a baby knight. So I've got 2 units of 2 broadsides of shooting, picking up 2 baby knights, and then you still have crisis suits, still have the rest of the list as well. Zeldar. That ends there. And then so I think they definitely have a place in the meta. However, it feels like they're gonna be like quite a gatekeeper army. That's like, I think these SKU lists will be quite a gatekeeper army. If you can't deal with it, then you can't. If you can, then it's fine. And that's where I think Guard comes in, because Guard, I think, is a bit better than Chaos Knights. Because even though they're indirect to hit, it's still quite very powerful, right? Army-wide lethal hits is still very strong, even though the carriages went up 40 points. So some other stuff went down, like tank commanders went down 35 points. That's like, they were, in my opinion, I thought they were good before. Now they're even better, like, because they control so much, right? They have access to a very strong weapon, so they have a very good anti-tank. They can give orders. They're quite durable. Decently cheap now. And the shoot on death. That's so hard to play around. It's like, I want to kill this thing, but if I do, it's going to shoot me and it's going to hurt. Like, it is going to hurt when it shoots me. So it feels like, even though Guard took a bit of a hit with indirect, you can still take enough indirect where some matchups are fine. So instead of you nuking your opponent in like 4 turns of indirect, you were like 2 or 3 turns, you do it over the course of 4 or 5 turns, but now you have more direct shooting. So it's actually not that detrimental. And you still have, cheap infantry, just have Borgrin. I think Borgrin went down which is wild. And they were great before. 4-up in Van, T6, minus one damage, 6-up for no pain. Like,
difficult to shift, yeah.
They're tough cookies to shift. It's not easy. And not a lot of armies have the correct profiles to deal with that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a good mid-board presence. Tag stuff up. And they still have Leontis. You're getting extra CP. You've got Sentinels as spotting. It's like you still have a very well-rounded list. So I still think they're quite strong. Then after that,
No, wait. Let's stick to Chaos Knights and Guard. I have a question about Guard because a couple of weeks ago I interviewed Skark. So the Polish monster
mastermind.
The mastermind of Guard. He said when he went to the WTC, he essentially took a list that revolved around like a lot of artillery, like crazy amounts of artillery that was able to tackle GSC pretty well, but it was also able to tackle Custodes really well. But when we discussed his list and his preparations for the WTC, he said that actually before the WTC, up until the very last tournament that they had, like preparatory tournament, he was actually considering either one of the super heavy tanks, so like a Baneblade or something of the sort, or some other tanks, but at the end he decided to take even more artillery. What do you think is going to happen now? So artillery went up in points, so maybe people will take less of it. Where would your eyes go looking for alternatives? Would that be the super heavy forge world tanks, or would it be the Rogal Dorns and the Lemon Russes?
So I think dependent on which terrain format you're playing on, I think on LGT it's tough to still get those super heavies through. I think you'll probably play something like Rogue Dawns or Demon Rosses because they can maneuver through those, and that's fine. However, because the super heavies also went down, I definitely think you take super heavies on like terrain, like GW terrain, because they have so much output. The one super heavy that does deadly demise on a free up when you kill a vehicle, you can just blow everything up in their lines. Like that's. Mm-hmm. Some people can't take D3 mortal wounds on every single thing. Like it's a lot. It's a funny rule, but that does add up very quickly. So I think depending on the terrain format you're playing on, if you are able to move the super heavies and get direct lines of sight on like two midboard objectives, then super heavy is definitely the way to go. However, playing something like a little bit more enclosed, like more like ruins, then Rogue Dawns and Tank Commanders will definitely be the way forward because they still have very good output, very durable. And they're decently priced. So I think depending on the terrain format, definitely. I think for LGT, Rogue Dawns and Tank Commanders are definitely, the winners there. I could be proven wrong because super heavies are still quite points efficient. It's just that it's a lot of points in something that isn't able to really leave the DZ.
Yeah, but one way or another, it makes it more difficult for those all-rounders that you mentioned, where if you want to bring a list that is both good at killing tanks and both and at the same time good at killing like infantry, so you can tackle swarms of tyrannids or something, then probably you won't have enough volume to actually destroy a super heavy tank or even a Rogal Dorn. So it might be... I mean, it's actually quite difficult to prepare for a tournament like that because you have all sorts of... It's not team's event where you can hide in the pairings. You need to be ready to face absolutely everything, right?
Yeah, you're in the open. You're in the open here. I like to say you're naked and you have to deal with everything that's going to come your way. So,
very much.
You don't have a choice.
Very much so.
Shall we move on to the next army then? At this point,
okay. So. It's quite tough. So we've talked about Chaos Knights. We've talked about Guard. I actually think this next spot is like almost a tie between CSM and Votann. I'll talk about Votann, why I think Votann is good personally. And I'll talk about CSM. I'm not a CSM expert. I'm not a Votann expert either. But when I've seen the Votann points decreases, I was just like astonished because I thought like this army was like could pay the mission decently well. I don't think it deserves the win rate that it does alongside other armies. It went down crazy points. It's insane. Because I think I initially had written like a list that was like 2,300 something plus points, and that went down to like 1,900, like about like above, slightly above 1900. So like the list had gone like 350 to 400 points. And I was like, what? That's insane. All of a sudden, when you could only fit in essentially it's 400 more points of firepower. It's worked really simply. And that's like not nothing, especially when how their rules change now. Like instead of just picking one unit to get plus one hit and win for your army, pick four units. And either one of those that you kill, depending on the battle round, you get your extra CP for. So like, well, I'm going to do that one chaff unit that you have right in front of me, kill that, get my extra CP. Now, all of my strats that are really good, they have really good strats, by the way, on par with Eldar, maybe just worse. So like, they're very powerful strats, and they're able to unlock that very early on in the game. Or if they don't, your opponent's playing very passively. But they have something like six Sagittars with five idiots each in each one of them. That package is not expensive. It's essentially, it's 100 points for a Sagittar. That's 100 points for T10, 9 wounds with a 3-up and like a lot of, like a decent amount of guns, if you depending on which profile you're taking. And then you're taking Fortresses. Fortresses are only 225 now. That's T12, 16 wounds with a 2-up save. All of this has access to Armor of Contempt for 1 CP. All of this can shoot you back after it's shot it. It's like, it's quite good. The guns on it are not nothing to scoff at either, especially when you think of a fortress that ignores cover and it's all of its shooting. Probably if you're getting from it, doesn't exist. They can also give sustained hits, depending on the way gacha tokens work. Like, they've actually fixed one of the enhancements that they have, so that appraising glare actually works now. So you give something an extra grudge token, very powerful. Stuff like Thunderkin got cheaper, so they, you know, you're thinking, oh, how do they deal with hordes or how do they deal with infantry? It's like, well, they deal with Tau quite well, actually, funnily enough, because the Thunderkin are anti-vehicle 2-up with Blast. Strength 5. And plus one to who win these like non-vehicle targets. Like, if you're shooting most infantry are now going to be winning on 2s of 2 tokens. And it's got plus one to hit. It's like it's a lot of shots and it's cheap. It's like it's 75 points for free. And then you can take the Hearthguard, the wannabe Terminators, decently durable, 2-up save, you can void armor, -1 to wound. It's not nothing. And they can have a lot of shots because they have the blast weapon, and you can take them with the Devil gun or the plasma gun. It really depends which one you want. So like a lot of that stuff got a lot cheaper. And the output was already quite decent. And they've actually buffed the output, not in just points, but with rules. Because it's a plethora of... I would sell, like, I quadruple the amount of targets that I get potentially SCP from earlier on. I quadruple the amount of targets that I can actually, you know, have plus one to hit and wound against. So my entire army gets more efficient. Especially when you think... Because the army doesn't have rerolls, it wants to take more stuff to lower the variance. And it's able to take that more stuff. So Wotan is definitely really, really... well suited. Like, I would be surprised if they don't win a GT. I think they already won a like event, right? It was, like, last weekend or something. I don't know if it was an RTT or a GT is the only issue. But like, they're good. And then moving on from that to CSM. I don't know if you had any specific questions you wanted to ask when on the board hand.
I didn't.
do they have any, like, you know, natural predators, like anything that they don't want to face?
So they don't want to deal with people that are able to deal with their, depending on which archetype you're going, if you're going with like all of the vehicles, they don't want people who can deal with loads of vehicles. Again, that's a type of skew. If it's a skew that can still play the mission because it's still got loads of idiots that can sticky objectives, do secondaries, I play primary, deny primary, and it's surprisingly fast. So it still doesn't like Eldar, funnily enough. And I actually think like, so it doesn't like Eldar and was it would, I want to say natural predators army wise, but that's a natural predator with what people can do. Is that the Voltan doesn't actually like being rushed, because if it's not able to deal with the rush, then it just falls over. Like, for example, this actually transitions quite well to my next point, where I think CSM is quite good, because CSM is able to take, you know, Terminator, Brook of Abaddon. It's a lot of points, but it wins you a lot of games. Like, it goes into the middle, can't shoot it, next turn advancing charges. Like, that will pick up 2 fortresses and, like, a Sagittar, and like, that's most of the output gone. It's like, oh, actually, that hurt. And then there's still the rest of the army. nothing new. But yeah, so stuff like CSM are quite good because they essentially have the ability to stat check some armies and actually exert an immense amount of pressure. And they also still have very good damage. Like, obliterators are still insane. Forge Fiends are still really, really good. It does a lot of damage, like a lot. And I think that's CSM's main strength. CSM probably has one of the highest damage outputs in the game, just raw damage-wise. And is able to exert a certain amount of pressure. Because you have the combat threat with, like, Abaddon, or maybe if you're taking Chosen of Chaos Lords. You have the threat with indirect from obliterators, which can also do blast against like hordes, so they can deal with that. They've got the Forge Fiends that are quite good into heavy infantry, because now that they've changed the dev wounds, it's still like, it's now like, Feast Custodes, each six of their rolls is dead custodian, really, because you can't really afford to take that many shields in a five-man squad, because then you're just dropping output. Maybe you take one or two shields. It's still not great. So like, CSM is like, sorry.
I think they have it both, right? They have both the firepower, the strength of the firepower, and the volumes. Like, yeah. Last weekend, I played versus a guy who brought a Hellbrute, I think. And the CSM Hellbrute gives you the possibility to give you, like, both sustained hits and lethal hits at the same time on a 5+ or something like that. So... Mm-hmm. So it just turns into those crazy amounts of shots that you need to be ready to take on your chest.
Yeah, like it's a lot. Like, and all of those shots had all like damage free AP loads, and like if you're obliterated in a half range, each one of those is 6 damage. And I'm just like, what is going on here? Like, first time I got shot by CSM, I was just like, wait a second, let me see these data sheets. I was just like, I just don't believe you. And I'm just like, what is this? It's like, it's a lot. But I think like CSM is quite well suited because of that, it can deal with armies like hordes, because it can just like loads of output. It can deal with armies that want to push into the middle, because guess what? There's 10 obliterators and Abaddon there ready to say hello. Like, it can deal with heavy infantry like custodes. Like, it has an answer to most things. And it can rush you. Like, it can just stat check. You can just go forward and just be like, hey, I'm now here. You can't deal with me. And that's what I think CSM is. However, CSM does have the issue of, if it does go down that route, there are some natural predators towards it, which is going to lead on to my next point, with such as Tau, right? I just want a disclaimer. Mm-hmm. That army is busted, I think, in my opinion now. It's probably going to be overshadowed by like stuff like Eldar, maybe some other things. But Tau, with the points decreases, before the points decreases, they're already like an A+ army. Like in my opinion, they already had like the 6 crisis suits shooting you is going to kill you. It's going to kill. It's like 6 crisis suits with Kaiyun and a crisis commander. So or like the Corsair commander, whichever one, shooting with Tetra Reroes into like even the Yinkon of March on to Wound is going to likely kill that Yinkon. It's a lot. It's like, it's a lot of damage. Like, I don't think there's much, if anything, in a game that will survive like a full break of crisis shooting you. Like, sure,
including the crisis.
I mean, there's been multiple times where I've shot 3 crisis suits and lost like 5, and I'm just like, okay, just don't know how this happened, but all right.
Win some, lose some.
Yeah, you get some, you lose some. But it's like, and like, so CSM has natural predators like stuff like Tau, because now you're trying to get into this gunfight, and guess what? This army shoots better than you, and the issue is it's also far more mobile than you. So it will dedicate the engagement. The advantage that you have is like the CSM, like Abaddon Terminator Brick, where you have to get within 12. But the moment like 6 crisis suits gets within range there with like a Tetra reroll, that entire squad free and Abaddon is dead, and just like, cool. I've lost like 2 crisis suits, but you don't have Abaddon with your Terminators. You've just lost 700 points. I've lost 120 because that's how much crisis suits cost now for 2. Like, whatever. I've got more out back ready to come. And Tau, I think Tau point for point probably have the most damage in the game now. Just if you're taking like cyclics, and they have everything that you want in an army, right? They have the damage. They have the decent durability and things like vehicle with 4 up in one. They have the speed with like strike and fade. Like you can rapid ingress and you have the auto 18. Like, so you have the chaff, you have the cheap chaff that you want. You can take piranhas, you can take like crew hounds, you can take crew tox riders, you can take whatever you want. that Codex, that Index got infinitely cheaper. That Index got as many points decreases as Rotan did, which is wild. I don't get it.
But is it
feels like the only thing holding them back is the fact that they're giving away fixed, right?
Yes. And that is a few weaknesses that they have. Is that they give away 20 for bringing it down just for showing up. Which then means your opponent can risk you just go to teleport home and just have something do it like in the middle with like a lone op behind the wall, which is hard for them to deal with. So then the Tao game plan revolves into, oh, I can't really beat Cajols and that stuff. I need to kill you. Which, to be fair, and credit to them, most of the time it works. However, sometimes it won't work. And that's when I think like it will fall off a bit. Because the game plan is so unsteady. Like they do a certain army so well. Like they will crush through hordes. Like just have so many shots. And you don't even need to overcharge them. You just like call some a million shots. They deal with infantry quite well. They deal with vehicles quite well now that broadsides are going down for some reason. So you can just fit in more broadsides in the list. You can just, if you didn't have broadsides before, you can take like three or four of them. Like it's gotten that much cheaper. And the main thing is on like is that like you said, Yoka, it's giving up fixed now. It's, to be fair, struggles with the Knights in a data sheet. A lot of things do, but that data sheet is quite strong. Minus 2 and no advance. And it doesn't take, you know, a brain surgeon to shoot a Knights in crisis suits, unfortunately. So the crisis just go from moving 18 to moving 10, and it's a lot slower. And then the Eldar index was already quite hard to deal with in addition to that. And they suffer from the fact that if they want to do serious damage, they also take damage back. It's always like a roulette. Though I will say it's the best feeling when you shoot all of your crises, they're all overcharged and you don't take a single mortal wound. That's like the highest of highs that you can have. It comes close. But yeah, so like Tau is quite strong there. So I'd definitely say it's like a top 3 army, if not top 2. And then that moves on. I don't know if there's anything you want to ask there.
I mean, do you think that army would still be as powerful if the Tetras were in there?
Not as powerful, no. It will still be quite strong. Because now that Shadow Storm has gone down, like, freeze 4 rerolls, you still have, like, freeze reroll ones because of Shadow Storm being so cheap. It does mean, like, you have to kind of cast her around, but you can kind of play around that because Shadow Storm is infantry for some reason, especially it's not. It's very sad. But, yeah, so, like, it wouldn't be as good. It would still be quite powerful. It would still be top 5. Don't know if it'd be, like, top 2, top 3. Which then moves on to the next army, which would, in my opinion, is Necrons. And specifically,
but before you do that, let's recap where we are because I got a little lost in the standings. So, 7 was
Chaos Knights. 7 was like Chaos Knights, then Guard, then you have like CS and Voltan, yeah, between
5th and 4th,
yeah, 5 and 4. Then
Tau and third,
I talk about Tau, and then 4. And I think to be fair, Tau can easily play for like that second spot, and I think like Voltan and CSM can play in between each other as well. It really depends. And I think first, there's an undeniable first, you can all guess it. But like between second and third, I think like it'll be Necrons there. And the reason for that is that there's a certain archetype of Necrons now. I'm sure people are, I guess you could say, more aware of with like, because of the change to Devastating Wounds and how that's changed, it means hordes have gotten more durable. And because like, if you do let's say Wraith Guard before did like 27 mortal wounds. That's good. 27 mortals. Now it just kills as many mortals as they have. So my cat's coming here.
Hi, cat.
She wants to go now. She doesn't like the camera, like her. No.
Doesn't like the spotlight.
No, she just wants the attention. as they all do. But it's like something like Necron Warriors is actually, when you actually run the maps, quite durable for a lot of armies to deal with. Like, sure, the output isn't as there. But Necron Warriors went down in points. Lich God went up. You might still take a Lich God squad. You might not. I'm not a Necron expert. You have to get Jitter on board for that one. but like that sort of archetype of list with like Necron Warriors, you know, you have an aura of AOC with Cezres. You have, you know, you have Ghost Dog. So you're using the strat to knock off the shot to bring Lords back. And then guess what? You do it again. Cool, Ghost Dog. And you're like, oh my god. And then it's going your command phase. And like, well, at that point, like, okay, cool. Resolve. And you're just like, oh my god. Like, if I got one shot this unit, which not many things in the game can, without going through the characters, it's functionally unkillable. And it's actually really hard for a lot of armies to deal with, because that's OC2, it can do actions quite well, can move up to the mid board, it can take it plays fixed secondaries quite well, take like cleanse and the flow teleport movement. So we'll do that really well. So that's not an issue. And that becomes a problem really quickly for a lot of armies. But again, there's some armies in the game that can deal with it, such as, which is why I said the Tau, because Tau has, for example, the output to punch through that. But other armies might not have the output to punch through that. And then it starts to become a problem, because the Necrons will have that on top of heavy destroyers, so they still have good anti tank. They've got a lot of stuff. The Necron Warriors, so if you're taking a horde, they'll just shoot you and just stay in combat with you. So it's not nothing. So like it does start to hurt. And like Lich Guard is still good. The Lich Guard, again, the change to their wounds are more durable. A lot of these infantry based armies got more durable with the change to their wounds, because you don't have to worry about stuff spilling over. It's just going to kill that amount of models there. It's quite strong, at least in my opinion, especially for like terrain like LGD terrain, where you can actually hide in your deployment zone with, if you're taking decent amount of infantry but not too many, and you can just move forward an objective you can hold from, like your backfield you can hold from, you know, just like for the entire game really, if someone's not running at you. You've got like two midboard ones that you kind of fight over, and you have one on each flank they can somewhat hide on, so like this semi hidden away. And Necrons thrive on that. They can just have 20 warriors just lined up on two objectives, cleanse that, so that's 4 points. Can do that realistically for like at least four turns of the game, so that's 16 points there. Before they either die or get tagged up too much. They can deploy teleport quite comfortably in the middle for at least 5 turns. So that turns really, like unless they're getting tables, that's 15 there. So like, all of a sudden you're playing that, and then you've got loads of like warriors running at you that are OC2. Every time you shoot them, it's more just coming back. It's just like, oh my god, can't deal with this in one activation. I don't have that many shooting activations. My combat's not that great. This hurts.
So I think it's a good spot to before we go to your number one, which I think everyone already knows what that might be. You somehow hinted towards it. There is a, I think it's a good spot right now to ask a question from a viewer. And the viewer is someone that you know pretty well, a friend of the podcast and a friend of yours probably as well, Mr. Dick van der Harst. Or Harst. Or, yeah, I'm probably butchering his surname, but still, I was never good with the Dutch surnames. But he asks a question, or a couple. Nassim, can we do a follow-up interview to the amazing one we did last year at the LGT?
Yes. Absolutely. Don't worry. Yes. And we'll have whiskey on the rocks. There we go.
And we will absolutely host you gladly, because it was one of the funniest and one of the best interviews that we've done over there. But to get to the meat of his question, also, do you reckon the meta will shift to all anti-infantry now that everyone and their mother is gearing up to kill 20 Necron warriors?
I think a lot of people again, this goes back to when you're building this in my first mythology, like LGT and my lit prep tools. It's like you need to be able to deal with the two extremes in your list, otherwise all flat, right? Like so I think people need to have tech to deal with the warriors, even though if it's not straight out killing them, in a way to essentially neuter them, close them down, if you're just locking them in their DZ somehow, if you're fast enough. Maybe killing them in combat, we've been able to kill their characters. A way to deal with the Necron Warriors, even if it's not just outright killing them. Just because you can't outright kill 20 Necron Warriors doesn't mean you're going to lose that game. It's going to be annoying and it's not going to be beneficial, sure, but you just have to come up with other countermeasures. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, you know that they're going to beat you through primary, really. So your secondaries will be about the same, because you should be able to deny some secondaries for them. So there's that. So it feels like the meta will shift to definitely having more anti-infantry guns, especially in relation to their wounds, because people used to take their wounds as anti-infantry. Now they actually have to take real anti-infantry guns and not just devastating wound weapons. So I think there's definitely going to be more of that in the meta, of course. And if you're not doing that, then you're going to have a bit of trouble. But I don't think you should get your entire list towards that, because then the issue that you run into is like, oh, I've played these, again, like I mentioned, stuff like Chaos Knights. Chaos Knights or Regnum Knights walk up to you and like, oh, you have all infantry guns that are like strength 6. Oh, I've got some bad news for you. Your aggressor's there. You know that one squad is going to kill one baby knight? Yeah, that's going to kill baby knight. But then your army's gone. What do you do? So it's quite it's quite tough. If you're just going to share, if you're just going to shift to all anti-infantry, I think you still need to have a balance, but definitely have a game plan into dealing with those infantry armies, and like have some things built in the list that's able to give you an answer and give you a game into those sort of list archetypes. Mm-hmm.
So funny you mentioned that, because he did have a follow-up question asking, would actually Chaos Knights maybe be a better choice than Necrons to take to the LGT because of Necrons being the current potential boogeyman and everyone teching in for them, whilst the UKTC terrain is actually pretty good for mobile shooting with the War Dogs, as they're quite fast, the terrain has shooting lanes, etc.
Mm-hmm. So I think it'd definitely be like again a good option. Like I definitely think Chaos Knights are a good army. I think they get out like somebody again if people are not able to deal with them. I think people are gearing up like maybe a bit too much to deal with like Nippon Warriors. At least that's what I've been hearing in the internet. Then if you walk with Chaos Knights, and Chaos Knights have a decent game into it, it's not phenomenal, but it's like Chaos Knights can have three baby knights just completely blocking the objective with all of that OC on like. And if you're taking the 13 war dog list, that's going to be 9 dogs just holding that, and then you've got 4 carnivores running at somebody, and just brigands there shooting. Yeah, you can have 6 brigands on the objectives, 2 on each one. Yeah, 2 on each one because it's 6, and then just a carnivore and another one, and then you have 3 carnivores running forward at them. I don't know how the cast items look like, but something along those lines, like I'm going to hold these 3 objectives, score 15s, you're going to score 10s and 5s. Because I'm all on all the mainboard objectives and you can't get onto them, I can actually potentially put you down to 5s and you're not scoring secondaries because your secondaries need to hold these mainboard objectives. And I'm scoring my secondaries because I'm going tactical and I'm going to score my tactical cards because majority of the points that you can score in the midboard and your opponent's DZ and you're currently doing that. So Chaos Knights are definitely one. I know he's also asking that because he owns both those armies. Yeah, both those armies. 100%.
So one more question from a listener from the chat, actually. Thank you, Henrik, for the question. I mean, I'm doing this because we know what the army number one is, and not much more can be said about the army that has been probably dominating the meta for such a long time. So how do you rate Death Guard now after the changes in the balance data state? Do you think they stand a chance?
Apparently they got better, but I've not read a single one of their rules before. I've played against them before, but they just died. I don't know if that's still the case. I don't know. But apparently that index has gotten better, but I'm not entirely sure. I don't actually know anything about Death Guard, to be really frank with you. Like, if somebody was to roll up against the Death Guard army, I'd have a very understanding of what it does. But multiple questions usually are, any heroics? What's his durability profile? Anything else he can do? Like my big watcher, like on top of what's 12, how much damage is it doing shooting, how much damage is it doing combat, and how fast does it move? Those are like my standard questions that I'm just going to ask anyone, even if I'm playing the mirror. I'll just, it's just habit.
That's actually a useful piece of advice.
I've because like when you start to play the game for so long, you just have questions that you should always ask, like, can you heroic, you know, like how far can you move, how far can you move and charge, how far can you move and shoot, can you fall back and shoot? Can you fall back and charge? Can you advance and do actions? Like, questions like that. Because then it's like, all right, cool. So he's got... And if you're playing Eldar, the answer to all of that is always yes. But it's like, if you're playing a normal army, some people say no to something, say yes to some things. And that's how you build your game plan. It's like, all right, you can't fall back and shoot. So I'm going to tag you. You can advance and shoot. So I want to shoot you with a knight spinner. So you can't advance and you can't shoot and you can't charge. It's like, and just little stuff like that, really. Understanding it.
All right, give us your top one then, and then I'll probably have one more question. I don't know if Joker has any, but then I think we need to release you because you have some very important stuff.
Yes. So it's going to shock everyone here. It's going to shock everyone. Superior Knights. Knights, Eldar. Obviously. Eldari. Let's say this. If you change Phantasm, I've seen this before, has technically indirectly gotten a buff, depending on the soccer that you're playing. If you're playing like an infantry list, it's gotten a buff because you cannot vec that stratagem anymore. So that means that stratagem is always 1 CP, which means it's going to be used every single turn, which means it's quite rough for your opponent. Like the strat that, because that's the strat everyone wanted to Vect. That's why people, some people were taking Vect. People were taking double Vect. Oh, yeah, Phantasm, free CP. No. Mm-hmm. How much it should cost. And they'll use it like, they'll still use it like twice a game. It's that good of a strategy. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. free CP Phantasm. Oh, I need to think about it now. Actually, like one CP, I'm just going to do it. Even if you don't want to, like, ah, it's just free movement, one CP. Why not? Just do it. So, and like the change to Dev was like, it's like, sure, it's annoying, but still just as durable. Still the same amount of fate that's manipulation. Still the same amount of speed, pretty much. Still about the same amount of damage. Points have gone up on stuff, sure. Wraith Knights are not there for their purpose anymore. You drop a Wraith Knight, and then you just insert points on like your prior list, and it's like, it's still great. You know, it's not S++. It's now just S or A+. Like, it's very strong. It's the best army. Like, games will definitely feel closer if you sell them. But they'll sometimes feel deceptively closer. Like, it's closer. Oh, like, I'm doing something. But it's like, it's just playing you in strings. Like, oh, yes, look, you're doing better with me now. It's great. Nice. Anyways.
Here's a good for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Such stupid.
Yeah.
I was excited.
So, do you think they didn't get... Are you actually one of those who believes that they didn't get nerfed enough? Or are they in the right spot?
I did not get God, I was hoping for more. I was so sad. Like, oh God, because I've never to this day, like before this, I had never ever played Eldar. I now have at least 2 dozen games of Eldar under my belt. That's because it's just God, that index is just, man.
Like, so do you think the sorry to cut in like that. So do you think that the top cut might look similar to what Nova looked like recently? So it would just be Eldar on first, second, third, and so on.
I think that'll definitely be more various, like variants up there. Because, you know, Wraith Knights not as, because you don't have Wraith Knights as not one click. You have to play a little bit more nuanced, a little bit more precision. But if you can do it and you have the reps, it'll be fine. Like, I still think the good players will perform just as well in Eldar, if not better, because a lot of the natural predators from before actually got nerfed. A lot of the natural predators actually got nerfed. Like GSC, shafted into the ground.
Yes, so, I wanted to ask about that. Like, did you forget about them, or are they actually that bad?
No,
now?
They are. So they still do as much damage, great. But if you're playing with somebody who knows that they've GSC, someone who's played a lot of GSC, it's like, oh great, my drop turn. Now, will I have models after my drop turn? Before, it's like, oh yeah, I have models. It's like, I won't do as much damage, basketball points. And I was like, oh, I've gone second. My drop turn's turn 2. When this happens, like after my drop turn, it's turn 3 and my stuff comes back on 5s. Like, then query my drop turn, stuff will die after the drop turns. Like, and you have less damage you dropped him because your points went down, and also you can't double up on stress that you want. Can't come double within three, no double demo. So guess what? If the Overwatch 1 squad, that squad's dead. Oh, if you're playing this Eldar Phantasm, whoa, it's like it hurts. You know, it's a lot. It's brutal. Some would say. Yeah, you just need to nerf Eldar. Just need to nerf that index. Like, Nids isn't as good. They have a full codex with 6 attachments. Still not as good. God.
So, Eldar or Tau? Or something Eldar. Else? Eldar. As in, what are you going to take?
Much shock, everyone, guys. I have a Wraith Guard in my list. I have a Night Spinner. And I have a Yin Khan. It's going to shock everyone. I'm still playing around with it. I think I've come around with, like, 7 different lists. Like iterations as it's evolved, so I'm not entirely sure yet. I know I like Wraith Guard. Yin Khan's great, she's really good. The War Talk is really good, even though he went up quite a few points. I think I'm not entirely sure 100% how the final product's gonna look like. I know it's gonna be some variant of Eldar, it's gonna have a few different things. I don't think it'll be Hyper MSU because it's not my playstyle. I don't think it's gonna be all bricks of stuff, because then you lose yourself potentially to get activation locked. So it can become an issue. But yeah, like, it definitely it should at least have a Yin Khan. I know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds like nothing has changed very much. Like, we've seen this at the WTC, we've seen this at Nova, we'll probably see this at the LGT. Nas, I know that we need to let you go, so maybe one last final piece of advice. What could people do in order to prepare for the LGT and to tackle a list like yours? So the Eldar, is it just bring Eldar, or is there something?
You just read my mind. I was just going to say take Eldar if you have access to it. You take Eldar, guys. Take Eldar, Tau. You'll definitely have a blast. Literally, you will have a blast. Your opponents probably won't, but you'll have fun. That's the important thing.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's leave it there then. We will have other guests who will join us in the future to maybe try and defy this somehow. Maybe they will have an idea how to beat the Elder and so on. We need to let Nas go. So,
thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. It was a great
Event. Thanks very much.
Feel free to drop. We will just do the farewells and the summaries and so on. And we'll see you at the event.
See you at the event. Take care. Have a nice one.
Take care. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Joker, do you want to lead us out of the episode, perhaps?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't think there's much left to be said. So we did have Nassim. His lucky seven was the top seven armies. Some controversial picks, maybe. Well, we shall see if he was spot on or he was totally wrong in 3 weeks' time during the event. So, guys, again, if you like what we do, please like, subscribe, hit the bell button, consider becoming a Patreon, so on and so forth, with 10 people off from reaching 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, which would be fascinating to hit that landmark before the LGT itself. Thanks to our patrons, we wouldn't be where we are without you guys, and thanks to your support, we're definitely making steps to improve what we do. Thanks to Army Painter, who is our new and amazing sponsor or partner, and I think that's it with the thank yous. So thanks for watching, and make sure to tune in for the next Road to LGT / LGT Lucky 7 episode, which will be up shortly. You know ahead of it.
Time. There's one more thing. Sorry, before you go. We have a raffle going on. I think we didn't mention that. So we really would like to reach that 1,000 subscribers. If we do, then there's going to be a raffle that the Army Painter is sponsoring the awards for. Apparently, according to the Army Painter, this is going to be the 50 paint speed painting box, mega box set, I think, of speed paints.
Speed paint mega box is
all that's mega what it's set. Called, exactly. That's
something what it's called, yeah.
that's something like that. So, in order to win one of those, obviously, we would like you to subscribe to the channel, but also in the description of this stream and any other video that we will be releasing, there is a link to our Facebook post where we announce our partnership with the Army Painter, and we also mentioned that my son is becoming part of the team, and how we are going to use the cooperation with the Army Painter to let Vitalis paint some amazing miniatures as well with their paints, etc., etc. Do click on the link to that. Do react to that post on Facebook. Do share it with someone to help us grow. And then we will also, thanks to that, we will have a means of verifying whether you are subscribed to the channel. And during one of the episodes, after we hit the 1,000 mark, we will do the raffle on screen for you to see that we're doing this legitly. And we will have our lucky winner. So please do consider participating in the raffle. Please do consider subscribing to the channel. And please do consider becoming a patron, because that helps us greatly. Now I think we have covered it. So thank you to everyone who managed to stay with us throughout this entire hour and a bit. And we'll see you shortly with another episode of the LGT's Lucky 7. Thank you, everyone, and good night.
Bye-bye.